our kids are being called now is evil.
Yes.
And oppressive and hateful and bigoted. So it's one thing to stand against being called uncool. It's another thing to be able to stand against being called evil.
Welcome to the Mama Bear Apologetics Podcast. I'm Hillary.
And I'm Amy.
We are just two gals who are spiritually armed, highly caffeinated,
and just sassy enough to make bad ideas cry. Mama Bear is a ministry dedicated to helping you raise children who think critically, love biblically, and stand firm in the faith using scripture, reason, and reality.
Because remember, Mama Bears, this might not affect your faith,
but it might affect your children's.
Welcome to another episode of Mama Bear Apologetics. I'm Hillary.
I'm Amy.
And so today is the second time we're going to be trying to do our podcast, not only in audio format, but in video format. So give us a little grace. This is a whole different beast for us. But we thought, hey, you know, sometimes people would like to watch the conversation going on. So we are going to start trying to do this and for the future. So just bear with us as we get through any little
things. Seems like such a crazy decision because it's like, I barely know how to load an app properly on my phone. It's like, why not? Let's do a Zoom.
Sure.
What did go wrong?
We got all this time. Let's do videos.
Yeah.
So today we're going to talk about something that we discussed, probably not as much as I would like to have discussed in the Mama Bear Apologetics book, and that is the concept of linguistic theft. And so to start out, I really want to read through two passages. They're in the same chapter, but there's a middle part that's less apropos. Is that the word? So it's 2 Corinthians 11, 3 through 6, and then 12 through 15. So we're going to read that to you, and then we're going to discuss what this has to do with linguistic theft and why it's important to introduce our children to this concept. Because I tell you this with all, I don't know, certainty. I don't know what the word is. I tell you this emphatically, at least.
Yes.
This is
most
something.
Most assuredly.
Yes, most assuredly. This is something that is taking our kids captive. So here we go. For 2 Corinthians 11, 3 through 6. But I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. For if someone comes and proclaims another Jesus than the one we proclaimed, or if you receive a different spirit from the one you received, or if you accept a different gospel from the one you accepted, you put up with it readily enough. Indeed, I consider that I am not in the least inferior to these super apostles. Even if I am unskilled in speaking, I am not so in knowledge. In every way, we have made this plain to you in all things. And then down to 12 through 15. And what I am doing, I will continue to do in order to undermine the claims of those who would like to claim that in their boasted mission, they work on the same terms as we do. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. So it is no surprise if his servants, meaning Satan's servants, also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. Their end will correspond to their deeds. So I want to point out a couple things in this passage real quick. So first off, how was Eve deceived? It was through cunning, which means basically arguments. And what was led astray, it wasn't necessarily her heart that was led astray. Your thoughts will be led astray. So there's a reason why in, I think it's Romans 12, 1 and 2, where it talks about to renew your mind. It's like, because what comes in through our mind is what goes into our hearts. And so a lot of times people are trying to bypass the mind and go straight for the heart, and they don't realize how their mind is accepting ideas that are raised against the knowledge of Christ.
And just even how that, when you look into Romans 1 and you look into how the people were led into sexual sin, it didn't start with the heart. It started with the mind. It says
yes.
their minds were became degraded, and then their hearts became depraved, and that caused an actual outpouring in how they conducted themselves with their bodies, the arguments that they used, their behaviors. So there's this huge correlation between the mind, the heart, the body and how you see yourself. And so it's very important to protect the mind, not with the heart, but with the mind itself.
Exactly. So we are absolutely wanting to affirm teaching your kids scripture, teaching your kids Christian virtues, teaching them what the Bible says. However, what we are seeing happen with linguistic theft is people are taking even the verses, the virtues, the Christian fruits of the Spirit, and they're redefining them to mean something else. So your kids can say, oh, well, the fruits of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and self-control. Basically, the secular agenda has taken all of those minus self-control, I would say. Everything else they're fine with. Self-control, not so much. And they're saying, okay, our agenda here is how you get these fruits of the Spirit. So even if our kids are memorizing scripture, when those words get redefined by culture, they are not going to know how to stand against the enemy schemes. Because like it says in here, that he disguises himself as an angel of light, and that his servants disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. So if we are just teaching them about righteousness, but then there's a servant of the devil who is disguising himself in righteousness, we need to teach them how to tell between true righteousness and a false sense of righteousness. And that is what brings us into linguistic theft. So chapter 4 of the Mama Bear book is titled Linguistic Theft, How to Redefine Terms to Get Your Way and Avoid Reality. I think it was meant to be a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but at the same time, that really is what's going on. So here's a quick definition of linguistic theft. Linguistic theft occurs when people take a concept, virtue, or idea that most people already agree with, and then they change the definition to promote their own agenda. Without understanding that this change has taken place, many people swallow an agenda to which they might normally object.
I think this happens so easily with kids, especially when you have someone who's in an authority position or it's something that they're seeing on TV. I remember as a kid, I had watched a TV show, Halloween Town, and they made this flippant comment of, oh, cool, I'm a Wiccan. And I was like, oh, well, if Disney's talking about Wiccans, then it's got to be okay, because why would Disney lead kids astray, you know?
And of course, Disney would never do that.
No, of course not, right? So I think with kids, it's really important for them to understand that just because someone may be in a position of authority or maybe more learned doesn't necessarily mean that those people shouldn't be fact-checked. And it's something in the military we called trust but verify. And so a lot of kids, they don't know to do that. They think, oh, well, this person, they love me. They have my best interests at heart. So obviously what we're talking about, the terms that we're using, they have to be the same definition because they love me. And that's not always the case.
That's true. So we're going to do, part of this is just me talking. Part of it's going to be kind of a pseudo interview from Amy, because since I wrote the chapter on linguistic theft, I could just sit here and talk forever. So Amy, what are some specific questions that you would like to ask about linguistic theft that our listeners might want to understand?
Some of the things I would kind of like to know from your perspective is, have you seen this sort of growing in prominence as the years have gone by? Is this something that used to be an issue, or is it something that has been started to be used more frequently as maybe our culture has shifted more toward a postmodern state?
Yeah, I think it's something that started out a little bit more on the fringes, and it has become so mainstream that we cannot afford to ignore it anymore. So one of the main books that Amy and I are going to be talking about in upcoming podcasts is this one called Rules for Radicals, A Pragmatic Primer for Realistic Radicals. And let me read to you the opening... let's see. He quotes himself at the beginning.
I love when authors do that.
Yeah, he says, lest we forget at least an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement to the very first radical. Because remember, this is Rules for Radicals, so who is our very first radical? From all our legends, mythology, and history, and who is to know where mythology leaves off and history begins, or which is which? The first radical known to man who rebelled against the establishment and did it so effectively that he at least won his own kingdom. Who's he talking about?
Who do you think?
Lucifer.
Oh, twist.
So he is just now defined that the very first radical who was able to win his own kingdom effectively, mm-hmm. And he's paying nod and homage to him, is Lucifer, is Satan. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that kind of tells you where the rest of this book is going to be going. That it's like, I kind of wanted to be like, I wish there was like a book that just explained all these schemes. And it's like, oh, look at there. We do have one. We've got a book that explains all these schemes. And so if we are going to be able to teach our kids to stand firm and to recognize who is an agent of righteousness and who is an agent pretending to be an agent of righteousness, which we'll go into some of the other quotes from this in the future. This is a concept they need to understand because they need to be able to sift through what is actually biblical and what sounds biblical, because those are right. Two different things.
Hey, y'all. So give me a quick second to talk about this month's sponsors. We have sponsors so that we can keep providing you with free resources. And let me tell you, oh my gosh, the sheets that Cozy Earth sent me are amazing. I even had asked my mom for really good sheets for Christmas. And don't tell her, these Cozy Earth sheets blow those out of the water. Because of my health, I spend a lot more time in bed than the average person, so I really wanted to make sure that being in bed was a pleasant experience for me. Y'all, even the lady who helps me around the house on days when I'm feeling sick, she took one feel of these sheets and asked me who made them. The difference is so immediately noticeable. And I'm assuming it's the unique fabric they use. It's not cotton. It's something called viscose of bamboo. And not only is it soft, but it gets softer every time you wash them. And so here's the best part about Cozy Earth sheets is that they stand behind their products so that there is a 10-year warranty. You can like literally get your kids into college in the time that the warranty of these sheets are. And you have 100 days to return them risk-free. Risk-free, y'all. So if they aren't the best sheets you've ever slept in, just send them back. Go to CozyEarth.com. That's CozyEarth.com. And use the code MBA, as in Mama Bear Apologetics, when you're checking out, and you'll get 20% off. This code only lasts as long as they are advertising with us for the summer, so get them now. Oh, and apparently they also have beach towels. So if their towels are as amazing as their sheets, then yeah, stock up on those too, especially if your kids are at the pool a lot. Again, go to CozyEarth.com, that's CozyEarth.com, and use the code MBA. Hey, Mama Bears, I'm here to talk to you about a new product, someone who has seen what Mama Bear is doing and wants to support us, and they are Aqua True. Backstory, John and I just moved, and I really liked the water in our old house. And so when they offered us to send us one of these machines, I said, yes, please. And so they have a variety of different kinds. They have ones that go just on your countertop. They have ones that you can install. But it is not just some charcoal filter. It is reverse osmosis, meaning that filters out 15 times more particles than you would normally get. And I have to say, I feel kind of weird about drinking the other water now that I taste the difference, because I'm wondering, what is that that I'm tasting? One of the most important things that this removes is something called PFAs, which are really bad. There's this chemical that breaks down really, really slowly in your body and can just cause havoc. But it's found in like 45% of drinking water. But with this reverse osmosis process, your water is going to be a PFA free, which to me is a little bit of peace of mind. And one of the other things I love is that you don't have to replace the filter like every 2 months. It's like 6 months to 2 years. So you can basically put it in and forget about it, which is basically what I normally do anyway. So this just works with how I am. So anyway, I recommend going over to AquaTrue and taking a look. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee, which means that if you don't taste the difference or if like your water's just fine, you can get your money back and you can send it back. So what they're doing for Mama Bear is they are offering a 20% discount on all their products. If you type in MBA, Mama Bear Apologetics, MBA, go to aquatru.com. It's AquaTru.com, and type in MBA for 20% off any of their products. So see if you like it as much as I have.
Yeah, and it's those subtle shifts that just, and I hear it often used with compromise. You know, people don't typically just compromise on a dime. It's these subtle little choices that they make, these little shifts. And yes. I mean, that is exactly how Satan used his cunning to trick Eve. And yes. That's how often we find ourselves in poor situations. We're sitting in this instance, we're like, how did I get here? And then you can kind of trace the line of thought like, oh yeah, it's because of A, B, and C. Yeah, so it's those subtle shifts that you don't quite notice that sound I'm good at the time that can really trip people up.
And that's what we need to teach our kids to notice is the subtle mm-hmm. shift. Because again, it's like the scripture says that Satan will come to us as wolves in sheep's clothing. So people yes. keep expecting the wolves to look like wolves. And when it looks like a sheep, when it looks virtuous mm-hmm. and righteous and it sounds good, mm-hmm. they're like, well, of course that's a sheep. Of course that's from God. But yeah. it's like we have to recognize that a wolf and a sheep are going to look identical. It is by their message that we determine. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious then with that in regard, what is the difference between what we'd call linguistic theft, the co-opting of the word, and then the evolution of language?
Yes. And so a lot of times people want to act like this is the same thing. So let me tell you the best example I just discovered for evolution of language.
No, this one's funny.
Yeah. So I discovered there was some dictionaries that I had when I was a kid that I think my dad had when he was a kid. And so we inherited... Not inherited. My dad's still alive, but they're in our library now.
Yeah.
And so one day I'd forgotten that we had them. So I was like, I'm going to look at some of the words that we used in the linguistic theft chapter just to see, mm-hmm. like, because this is from 19, either 60 or 65. It's the Webster's New World Dictionary. And so the very first word I looked up was bigot.
Okay.
Because everybody likes calling everybody a bigot right now.
Oh my goodness, yes.
The very first definition for bigot is a man with a mustache.
I'm so glad that mustaches are out of fashion right now, because then I'd be like, oh, look at all the bigots walking around.
Oh, I'm excited for when people start wearing them again. I'm just going to be like, you bigot. I already told my husband.
It's like, look it up, it's okay.
And so it comes from the fact that I think it's in Spanish, the word mustache is like bigote or something like that.
Oh,
so bigot,
okay.
Mustache. So man with a mustache is a bigot. That is not what we would call it today. So this would be an example of evolution of language. There's not any... There was not any some agenda. There was no agenda to try to like demonize people
malicious.
With mustaches. Yeah. They didn't really care. But there are other words. So that would be the evolution of language. Linguistic right. theft is when they purposely take a word that everybody agrees with mm-hmm. and change the definition so that people think they're agreeing with what they think the word means, but mm-hmm. it's been redefined, and they actually start championing for a cause or an agenda that they might normally object to.
What's a really great example that you can think of that most people would recognize that's going on right now with linguistic theft?
Oppression. I'm going to say oppression. And violence. Ooh, violence is...
Violence.
Actually, let's talk about violence. So this is another book that I'm obsessed with right here. It's called Unjust by Noah Rothman. The Social Justice and the Unmaking of America. Actually, I think I have this in the notes that I can just... I'll read it from here. So on page 30, he says, it is increasingly common to hear social justice activists equate discomforting or objectional speech with acts of violence. So our word that we're doing here is violence. Mm-hmm. And not in a metaphorical sense. These activists are just as liable to view reactionary activities, including public disturbances, property destruction, and even the physical harassment of their opponents as alternative forms of expression. Wow. Since they conflate offensive speech and violence, a violent response to speech isn't just reasonable, it's necessary, it's practically self-defense. So what we have here is, everybody already agrees, right, that violence is bad, right?
Right, right.
So if you now say words are violence,
mm-hmm.
well, now that people say violence is bad, words are violence. Now these words are bad. And now what you can do is say, well, they perpetrated violence on me, so I'm going to perpetrate violence on them, tit for tat. You know, if someone punches yes. you, it's okay to defend yourself and punch back. But the first punch being thrown is apparently words. The second punch being thrown is an actual punch.
Yes.
You have literal violence that is now being equated with speech. So if you're violent towards me, I'll be violent towards you. Yours mm-hmm. might be speech. Mine will be action. Same thing.
Oh my gosh. You know, and that brings to mind this really great video that I watched several years ago. And I believe it's called Education, S-H-U-N, at the end mm-hmm. of it. And it was done by this sort of Australian group. And I think it was meant as satire. It was meant to be funny. And it depicts this
what
guy
walking out.
I want to say it was like 2012-ish.
So it could have still been satire back then.
I know, right? And it could have. And so it depicts this guy walking into what he perceives to be as a math class. And there's about six students in there. They're all dressed in black. The teacher is this female who looks absolutely terrifying. And in the center of the room is this box. And as it's a large box. And as he walks past it, it bounces a little bit. And she goes, ignore that. It will end. And so he sits down and they're supposed to be going to this math competition, basically. And so to get there is, you know, whoever has the best grades get to go. And so he has this huge stack of papers and it's all these theories, complex theories, and it looks great. You're like, okay, this guy's a shoo-in. Well, it turns out, no, that's not what got you there. It's your intersectionality points. And so they're having him do these math questions and he's giving these answers. And they're like, no, that's wrong because you're not factoring in the fact that she's a female. And this, and he's like, well, this is absurd. This isn't math.
The math should be the same either way.
Exactly. So his other students start reacting very violently and getting very upset with what he's saying. And the one female, she stands up and she goes, your words are violent. And if you don't stop that, I'm going to have to attack you. And so it culminates with them stuffing him in the box at the center of the room. And then, of course, this other student walks in and everybody's sitting down just like they were at the beginning of the video. And as she walks past the box, it bounces. It goes, don't worry, it will end. And it's all talking. It's this huge cycle about how people are reacting. Now there's no such thing as objective truth anymore. It's all about perspective. And if you try to argue for anything other than that, then you are perpetrating violence and harm. And that's totally okay with them reacting violently toward you. So it's we'll have to include the link in there because it's a crazy thing. It's very well done. But I remember watching it back then and thinking, oh man, this is so funny. And now I'm like, wow, this is so prophetic.
This is kind of what's going on. And I would like to say that this is actually happening within mathematics is intersectional. Mm, we thought that was going to be the one area that's like, it's math. No, you can't have power dynamics in math. But they are starting to make it to where mathematics is has an when we say intersectionality, it means there's all these different oppressed groups and how your intersectionality is your identity in all these oppressed groups. So like, say that you are a white male, that's typically not considered oppressed, but if you're a white gay male, then you have this intersectionality of gayness and white male. So that you know, puts you more points in intersectionality. Before all this stuff happened, I remember a roommate of mine and I, we tried to think of the most minority that we could possibly think of. I think it ended up being like a Black Jewish lesbian, a Black handicapped Jewish lesbian.
I was going to say, they have to be handicapped in some way for them to really get all of it.
And so we were like trying to think of all the minority groups, you know, and stuff like that. And we had no concept of intersectionality, but this is legitimately what's going on is you have all these different intersections of, you know, I relate to the world maybe as a female, but then if I'm a lesbian, it's how I relate as a lesbian, as a female or a transgender or whatever. Mm. And so we thought stuff like math was safe and it's not. They're starting to say that math, oh God, we need to post a link to this as well. There's an article that's talking about how math itself is oppressive and it's another form of white supremacy. And I'm like, I'm not even sure how that works. But again, this would be taking words that everybody agrees on. Well, most people agree on that white supremacy is bad. I'd say your average person says, no, that's bad. So now what are we doing when now math is promoting white supremacy? But what we also have going on is traditional Christianity is promoting white supremacy. So like if your kids know white supremacy is bad and someone's saying, well, your traditional Christian ethic is promoting white supremacy, then they're going to say, oh no, I don't want to do that. What must I do in order to not promote white supremacy? Right. Well, we're glad you asked. You need to swallow this agenda. So anyway.
So that kind of covers step one then, is to identify a core value that people can universally agree on or disagree with, and then sort of, you know, use it to their advantage. So you have to first have that core thing to unify around, right? Otherwise you wouldn't have, everybody would just be wandering around, it's herding cats.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So we kind of outlined, this one's not in the book, so here you're getting some bonus material. Like what are some, like the three steps with linguistic theft? And so, like Amy just said, step one is you identify a core value that people universally agree or disagree with. For example, love is good, hate is bad. You support victims and you stand up against oppressors, right?
Right.
So Saul Alinsky on, let's see, what page is this one on? I forgot to put the page number. Oh yeah. It's page XXIII. It's even in the introduction. That's how primacy this is. So he is given an example of when they were trying to organize people against the Vietnam War back in the 60s. But they couldn't come right out and just organize around that because that was like, you know, defying the government, all this stuff. So they chose pollution, the concept of pollution. So in this
which is so funny because you wouldn't see those two as going together like, oh, we want to oppose the war. So let's go after pollution,
yes.
You know,
but everybody agrees that pollution is bad. And so you got to pick something that everybody agrees on. And so this is what Saul Alinsky says. He says, remember, once you organize people around something as commonly agreed upon as pollution, then an organized people is on the move. So the first purpose is to get an organized people on the move around something that everybody agrees with. Let's see. From there, it's a short and natural step to political pollution, to Pentagon pollution. So basically, if you're wanting to fight against the Vietnam War, you unify everyone around pollution and then you redefine pollution in terms of political pollution. And now if you say anything against it, well, you're for pollution. We're against pollution. Or if you don't want to march with them, it's like, or maybe they'll say everybody needs to wear brown for to support, you know, going against pollution. But what if you wear brown, it means you're going against the Vietnam War. So if you don't wear brown, then it sounds like you're yay pollution. And if you do wear brown, then you're implicitly saying we disagree with the Vietnam War. And I don't want to go into all the politics of the Vietnam War.
Right. Yeah. Well, no, it's just showing how a metaphor can be used to really manipulate a group into going after whatever it wants. It's almost like that metaphorical carrot on the end of a stick and getting them to go along. Though I don't know who would go after a carrot, maybe a donkey, but
horse. I know.
Yeah.
Maybe a rabbit. Horse. No, actually Petunia, our rabbit, if you really wanted her, if you really wanted her to do something, you gave her a tortilla chip. Those were her favorites.
Wow. There
Not
you
even
go.
Sure how we figured that out, but she loved tortilla chips, broccoli stems, and it was so cute when she ate the strawberries. And she was black, so you couldn't see it, but like the white bunnies, when they eat strawberries, they just look like rabid rat. It's all red around them.
It's very vicious looking.
Yeah. So the first step in linguistic theft is you have to identify this core value that everybody agrees on. So what we're seeing within our culture is we're seeing this with the concept of love, because it says in scripture, God is love, and we're commanded to love in so many different ways. We're seeing this in terms of oppression. We are called to fight against oppression and inequality and injustices, that the Lord is very much a champion of those who are downtrodden, like the widow and the fatherless, who would be in basically the most vulnerable populations back in the ancient Near East.
Right.
Let's see. So what are some of the other ones? Yeah. Violence. Where's our list? Love, truth.
Oh gosh. Yes.
Tolerance, of course, justice, equality, all those different words, that these are things that we should already agree on, except for when you change the definition. So first off, you got to pick something that everyone agrees upon. And actually I'm gonna read a couple more passages here in Rules for Radicals. Okay, so on page 37, he says, do what you can with what you have and clothe it with moral garments. Meaning whatever movement you're trying to do, it needs to be clothed in morality. So we can't just be teaching kids morality. We have to teach them what constitutes morality, because the all these agendas are going to be pushed using the words that we would consider moral language, which goes on to his next quote on page 44. All effective actions require the passport of morality. That this is, again, the wolf in sheep's clothing, that the sheep's clothing that it's wearing is the clothing of morality, that this is good, this is true, this affirms what scripture teaches.
Yeah.
And so whatever we want to shoehorn into that, we're going to say you are disagreeing with your own Bible.
Yeah.
Go against this agenda, because this agenda is love and tolerance and peace and joy and all the things that we're supposed to affirm.
Well, and that's what I think is interesting, is when you're talking about how, you know, you're framing these arguments, you're cloaking them, which is just so very underhanded. You know, it just reminds me of World War II, how they would cover wood piles with what seemed like tanks to come off as more aggressive and having all these things that they didn't actually have. But then that second part too, of flipping it around and claiming that the other side is actually they're against those things. Yeah. Oh, no, that's, those Christians are against this, or they're against
hateful,
the love and
they're
equal.
Intolerant.
They're hateful.
They're
yes, they're using these terms as sort of an ad hominem, a character attack on the person. Oh, if that's what they are, if we can lump them in this group here, then we can say everybody in that group's bad and you can just discount them,
yep.
Which is, yeah, I mean, it is. It's very effective, especially with social media. You know, if you don't stand up, if you don't speak out, if you don't raise your fist when you're surrounded by a crowd, you are against everything they're standing against.
Yes.
There's no dialogue. There's no discourse in the middle of, no, wait. And it's funny because I've seen videos. In fact, I believe it was a woman who was sitting outside one of these diners, and she and several others were approached, and she actually tried to discuss with them and they wouldn't even hear it. You know, there is no middle ground.
You have to raise your hand in solidarity with us.
Yep.
No discussion. If you try to discuss, you're a fascist.
Yes. Oh gosh. Yeah. And so that it's one thing that's so interesting about that. It's not only just frame it, but then you have to use it and twist it against the other person. There's no,
yep.
There's no discussion of ideas.
Yep. So that brings us to step two and three. So the first step was the identify the core value. Step two was frame the arguments for your agenda in terms of promoting the things that people agree with, like love, mm-hmm. justice, and equality, and claiming that the agenda is the solution for those things that people disagree with, hate, intolerance, yeah. bigotry, racism, fascism, et cetera. And then I said the Saul Alinsky quotes of do what you can with what you have and clothe it in moral garments, mm-hmm. and all effective actions require the passport of morality. I think one of the interesting things about both of these quotes is he's not advocating for morality.
Yeah.
He's advocating for smuggling in your agenda with morality. It's like he won't even define
to get power. Morality. Yeah.
Yeah. To get power. Mm-hmm. And then step three, claim that anyone who is against your agenda is for the things that people universally agree upon are bad. So if you disagree with the agenda, then you're for oppression, you're for
yes.
victim shaming, you're for
yes.
Hate, you're for, you know, it's like you're for all these things. And so this is how our kids are being really manipulated right now. Cause
yeah.
like I think about back when, you know, I was in high school, that living the Christian life, you know, the words that you got were, you know, a prude, a goody goody,
mm-hmm.
You know, or, you know, sometimes they'd say you're just outdated or just, you were just uncool. You were a nerd.
Yeah.
That is very different than what our kids are being called now. It's like, you know, we can deal with nerd and prude and all those different things. What our kids are being called now is evil.
Yes.
And oppressive. And hateful and bigoted. So it's one thing to stand against being called uncool. It's another thing to be able to stand against being called evil.
Yes. Well, and nobody wants that. Nobody wants to be equated to that. And even within our own family, I've got family members who are teens who, when we were just discussing certain issues, they were genuinely concerned. Oh, wait, are they racist because they are differentiating between these different ideas? Shouldn't mm-hmm. they just be for them? You know, they didn't know. And gosh, it was what, 13, 14 years old. They just didn't understand that. No, you, just because you're against certain false ideas doesn't mean that you are racist, evil, mm-hmm. oppressive, that sort of thing. But they aren't being marketed that, even within their teen magazines and that sort of thing. No, you have to totally go on with this. In fact, gosh, what was it? It was CNN. They had an article that it even said Gen Z is looking for a revolution.
Mm.
And how are they getting this revolution? By saying, this is the only way. Here is the new original sin. And here's the only way to get there.
Yep.
It's fascinating.
Yep.
Terrible, but fascinating.
Yeah, terrible, but fascinating. A person who disagrees with an ideology or agenda is therefore characterized as a proponent of injustice, inequality, hate, and intolerance, and an enemy, basically, of all things that are good. So, and so this is like where it comes for full circle. And the final step is disagreement is no longer disagreement. It is defines you as evil, according to all the words that they just basically linguistically stole from you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sorry. I'm having to, forgive me. I have to keep muting this because we have a thunderstorm that just randomly came over us. But no, you're right. Is you're either for us or against us. You have to agree full bore or you're out of it. And yeah, it's very dangerous because then kids, especially in social settings, when they're presented with them, a lot of them will, you know, bow down to it because again, they don't want to be outside of the group. They don't want to be considered evil, ostracized, yeah. that sort of thing. And so yeah, it's something that's very oppressive to kids right now.
Yeah. And I'd like to say, this is what I underlined in Rules for Radicals on page 10. I consider this basically his thesis statement. It says, my aim here is to suggest how to organize for power, how to get it, and how to use it. So again, he's not looking for what is right. He's not looking for what is moral. He is looking for how you get power. And using morality as if it's speaking for you is how you organize to get power. So I hope that kind of gives a good overview of what linguistic theft is. Just as a reminder, we read 2 Corinthians 11, 3 through 6 and 12 through 15. Linguistic theft is different from the evolution of language in the sense that it's not just, you know, something that evolved over time. It's actually changing a definition to force you to agree with an agenda you might not normally agree with. And the steps for getting there is you identify a core value that people already agree upon, and then you make your agenda basically the champion of that core idea, no matter if it is or not. Step two is you frame all your arguments in promoting that morality that you're claiming to have. Step three is you claim anyone who's against your agenda is actually against those moral things. They are by definition immoral. And then finally, you end up with disagreement is no longer disagreement. It's it basically defines a person as evil or all the bad things, you know, the bigot, the intolerant, the pro-injustice, all those things. And so this is how the enemy is capturing our kids. As we go back again to the passage, that the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning. That this is the cunning that is happening that is taking our kids by storm. So in the following podcast, we're going to start going over what are some of the specific words that have been linguistically thefted? How do you know when linguistic theft has taken place? And basically, what can we do to prepare our kids against this linguistic theft so that they know when someone's trying to shove an agenda down their throat that is raised against the knowledge of God?
Absolutely. And even we're even going to touch a little bit on why words are important, because right now we're seeing this assault on even linguistics to the extent that words are considered a social construct, meaning they have no basis or grounding in reality. And that poses a huge problem to kids, especially just even dialoguing with them. So we're going to touch a little bit on that too.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, hop over to mamabearapologetics.com, where you can get more links to podcasts, blogs, and even request a speaker for your next women's event, family retreat, or your next church conference.
Mama Bear Apologetics is a listener-supported program, so if you really like what we're doing, please go over to our website, www.mamabearapologetics.com, and click donate.